How you doing?
Yeah, but you're here without
some of the stuff.
Other guys
jumped out.
That's what I read.
She did all just the lifting aspects. I think are pretty brief.
I dropped
off. Built a great presentation.
Get them to react to stuff.
I said to her, we need to give her a presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't stay with the bad English to for the accent.
They were sort of selling our good name there. You guys already did this now. You're talking about it. It's about recycling stuff. Right, it's about sediment. That's what we're talking about. No, I'm not. We'll go find some film. You want to do that? Okay. I got to stay for a bunch more items. Enforcement report, item 13, which is kind of water quality issues. It's kind of rough amoeba of stuff. And then they've got a tour to some low impact development sites here in town. I'm not going to say anything, but I've been told I have to plan. I would like to be a big car.
Oh, okay.
It's around.
John.
Yeah. We were just talking about that.
You want to have a theater with these guys or no?
You're not joining the club. No, I asked
him. What time did they say they were starting up again?
Hey, Mike.
Mr. Chairman, before we start, do you want to comment on rearranging the agenda and our time constraints this afternoon, please?
Yes. What we have decided to do is move item 13 to the end of the agenda, because it's not an action item, it's informational, it's meant for board discussion, and so we're going to go item 12, jump right to item 14, then item 15, and then follow with 14 at the end, because we want to leave here at 20 minutes to 3. Right? We want to stop the meeting at 20 to 3 so we can get together, gather our things, and go on this field trip, which is mentioned on page 5 of our agenda.
Right, that's what I just wanted to point out to the members of the public, that it's not a separate agenda item, but it is under field trip on page 5, and we will be, will be a quorum of the board there.
Okay. All right, so item 12, Mr. Packard.
Okay, I just want to mention quickly a few things. This is a large violations listing because we skipped a meeting, and so it's a double dose of violations. I was planning to go through and pick out some of the highlights, as Mr. Jordan suggested last time, but it turns out there are no Class 1 violations in there, so I pointed out that in a paragraph there. I mentioned this morning there were some errors on the Montecito. Carpinteria also is listed in here, and those aren't real violations either. They have a little misunderstanding about what the monitoring requirements actually required, and they were doing a little too much, and it turns out they weren't violations after all. But I also wanted to mention the ag road enforcement down there. The staff report, we issued 6 complaints for ACLs against farming operations who had failed to pay their monitoring fees. So they'd enrolled, but failed to comply with the cooperative monitoring program. And we ended up settling those, finally. It took a lot of work and a lot of back and forth. We'd sent them notices of violation, offers to sell, but it wasn't until they were faced with a board hearing and having to come here and face a fine, that they're actually willing to sit down and pay their fees. So all of them actually paid their past due fees, which was a benefit of settling. If they came before the board and the board issued a penalty, none of that goes to the cooperative monitoring program. So they were able to pay those past due fees and some minor amount of penalty on top of that. A couple of actions that have occurred since I wrote this, but we'll see on the next one, but I'll just mention, are a case in Monterey County where a farming operation there graded a stream. They tried to straighten it and remove some vegetation, and Fish and Game noticed it and wrote a report on it and recommended that to the DA for enforcement. So the DA was taking action. We got involved in discussions with the discharger and the DA, and at the same time we settled Clean Water Act violations. The overall penalty was $350,000, and $85,000 of that came to settle our violations and went to the cleanup and abatement account. So that, I think, was a good benefit to us. I heard about the case at a regional task force meeting, which we try to attend as many as we can. There are task forces that meet in Monterey County, Santa Barbara County, and San Luis Obispo County. It's a good opportunity where we can sit down and see where other agencies are having problems on issues similar to ours, and we can and get together and take common enforcement actions sometimes. And there are also two MMPs that Mr. Harris signed recently, one for San Juan Batista and one for CMC again. The good news is CMC is in construction with their ultraviolet light disinfection, so they'll be getting rid of the chlorine process and hopefully almost all of their violations that they're chronically having. So other than that, if you have any questions, I'll be happy to attempt to answer.
Dr. Hunter and then Mr. Johnston.
Thanks, Harvey, for the summary update. I do have two questions on the ag order.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just fire the questions off and then you can answer them. The first one, I think, is more has more implications for how the forms might reflect, or the information that has to be filed, how those reflect operators that cease to farm during a given year,
right.
or the partial, you know, operation of a partial year. So how does the form reflect that? Then the second question I have, maybe just a unique thing, and that concerns the idea that someone put the wrong name on their report, and that then meant that your enforcement action was directed to the wrong person. Yeah. And I mean, is that just a one of a kind thing, or is that something that can be prolific in the process? I don't know.
It may not be uncommon, especially in some of the older records. I think the operations that are using the ENOI, that's pretty good data. But for instance, one of these that we looked at, the paper NOI had been signed by a pest control advisor, so acting on their behalf. What we assume happened there is that the farmer wanted some pesticide sprayed. The operator, the PCA, went to the county to get the permit. The county said, "Are you enrolled in the ag order?" And they said, "I have no idea." So they came in and enrolled. The PCA signed the enrollment, went and did the spraying, and the operator may not have understood exactly what was involved in enrollment. But I don't think that relieved him of the responsibility, because we sent letters, all kinds of notifications, still didn't get any activity with the cooperative monitoring. So that may not be uncommon, especially in some of the older enrollments. And on the first question, we did see that also. There were some of the operations where they had ceased operation a couple of years ago and never submitted their notice of termination. And again, the ones that are up to date with their ENOIs, that's not an issue, but there are some of the older enrollments that still have some issues with the data.
So over time, those are going to probably be screened out, and we'll see less and less of that?
I think so, yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnston?
Yeah.
Couple of different questions, Harvey. First of all, on I'm glad to note that we settled the ACLs on the cooperative monitoring fees. And forgive me if I missed it in the staff report, but can you give me a sense of where we are overall on the cooperative monitoring fees in terms of you know, I know they've been sending us their billings for quite a while, and these are really the first ones we've actually taken through the whole process.
Right.
What's out there in terms of people who are not paying, and where are we going with it? And is there, I guess, a follow-up question, if it's a good chunk, is there a way we can get the farmers to be part of helping us track these folks down?
Tracking them down is not that difficult. The ones who are enrolled, it's fairly easy to tell whether they are paying their CMP fees or not. That's not a problem. We know who the violators are according to the paperwork. The situation is there are a small number of violators that go back several years. They're chronically behind on their CMP fees. Some of them may have finished farming and never told us. There's a smaller number of current operations that are behind for 1 year, and we suspect, as you know, they'll get an NOV and a lot of them will come into compliance. But what you see is there are very few that owe a lot of money. So it's a curve that it's very, there's a few at the top and then it goes down very quickly, and there's a whole bunch that owe $100 or $200.
So we're obviously not going to spend a lot of resources chasing the people that owe $100.
No.
My question is, so what's roughly the total number of farmers enrolled, and what's our number of farmers that are kind of in that top tier that owe thousands of dollars?
I'll let Lisa answer the first question. The ones that are in the top tier are probably less than a dozen.
Okay.
Now, if you talk in the top tier is more than, say, $5,000. And those, there are a few that we're working on currently that we're going to be going after, but it's not a whole lot that owe a lot of money.
And we're prioritizing them based on how much they owe, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is the same as prioritizing on size, basically.
And are we publicizing when we settle, are we getting like some fees from them and such, so that it's more painful for them to pay us later than to pay cooperative monitoring?
Yeah, they had to pay their fees plus a penalty. So there was a penalty involved, and we did send out media notices. It was interesting. We sent two notices. One when we sent the complaints out. And we heard from several farmers who had names similar to the ones that were listed in the complaints, and they said, that's not me, right? And so people were looking, and then we sent out a second media notice when we resolved them all, and we're trying to get the word out there. Yeah.
Okay, good. All right.
It was in several papers, made TV news in several areas, including the Salinas area.
Good, that's important. Second question, what's going on with the city of Paso Robles sewage wastewater treatment plant? I see three pages of violations in the enforcement report.
What's going on there is kind of what Dr. McGowan was talking about. They're running an ancient plant. They're in the process of upgrading. I got an email from from Matt Thompson. Some of you may remember him. Mm-hmm. He's running the upgrade. They're moving right along. We've got contractors pre-approved to submit bids. The next step is to send out the bid packages to get the bids back. So they've got the rate increase in place. They're moving slowly and steadily. There's a lot of steps that have to happen before they can start construction. One of the first was to get a rate increase, and that was successful. They've got the design done, the bid package together, so he was very optimistic that they're going to.
So we're not moving to enforcement because we feel like they're actually dealing with the problem.
There are mandatory minimum penalties that they're paying, but we're not suggesting anything on top of that.
Okay, and the other question is, what's going on with the Salinas Industrial Wastewater Treatment Plant? I see that they're somewhat significantly over their permitted capacity. Is that new news? Is that old news? Is that just that they're doing more processing in Salinas than they used to?
That's not in there.
Less efficiently?
I've got it here. Report was hopefully. That's something I'd have to look into. I'm not sure what's going on there. I know that typically those industrial facilities are seasonal. They get a lot of canning wastes in this, it was probably tomato harvest time or something like
that. No, it's not. It's fresh. It's salad plants, basically.
Okay.
Salad plants, broccoli processing.
So I'd have to do some research on that one.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Delgado.
Yeah, easy question. You mentioned that there's about 1,000 farmers who have are in compliance, and you said there's a whole lot of $100, $200 in debt or owing us. How many farmers are not in compliance compared to the 1,000 that are?
Well, I'd say it's more than 1,000 are, but the ones that are past due fees, there's probably, I'm going to guess, around 200 that are behind on one invoice, and 30 to 50 that are behind on more than one invoice.
Okay, so it's largely successful so far.
Yeah, and especially if you look at on an acreage basis, really successful.
Okay, I have one speaker card. Does that conclude the report?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kira Redman. And if any other member of the public wishes to address us on this item, please fill out a card and submit it up here to Mr. Thomas.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the board. Sorry I didn't say this earlier, but welcome to Santa Barbara. It's always nice to have you in our town for one of your meetings. I'm very sorry that the one day of the year that you're meeting here in Santa Barbara, one of the three beaches is closed because of a massive sewage spill. The beach actually where most people go surfing and paddleboarding almost every day. Channel Keeper has testified before this board in the past about the city's significant SSO problem. And we urged you to take enforcement action against the city to compel some sort of action to deal with this problem. Well, as you know, that never happened, so Channel Keeper took it upon ourselves to file a citizen suit under the Clean Water Act against the city for violations of its NPDES permit for the stormwater system as well as the sewage treatment plant for these excessive sewage spills, as well as a rampant problem of exfiltration of pipes underground, leaking sewage into our storm drains that then lead to our creeks and beaches. That lawsuit was filed in 2011, and after about a year, we did settle. In a court enforceable consent decree, one of the elements of that decree is that the city has to ramp down the number of spills over the five-year term. The SSO performance goal for 2012 was 18, and unfortunately, this one that we have here today, that actually happened this weekend, is number 19. So I just wanted to put this on your radar again. You know, while citizen groups like Channel Keeper do have recourse under the Clean Water Act to take enforcement action, we need your help. So we need to get these kind of violations under control, especially with repeat offenders like the city of Santa Barbara's SSO problem. So I just wanted to flag this as a sort of ask you to put this on an elevated enforcement look moving forward. Thank you.
Kira, under the consent decree, is there any repercussions to the city for going over the 18?
We'll be looking very closely at that, and we'll let you know.
Okay.
But yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Harvey.
I can respond a little bit if you want to that.
Okay.
We asked the State Board Office of Enforcement, they have I think they call it SIU, Special Investigations Unit, to look into City of Santa Barbara's collection system. So that is one of their outstanding, it's on their list of things to do. It's not like we've been ignoring the situation here. So I wanted to mention that, and we're also aware of the Leadbetter spill, and that's something we'll be taking a look at also.
Okay. All right. Why don't we move to item 14, public forum. And let's see how many cards I have. Abby Taylor Silva, I have Steve Schimmick, Craig Stewart, Enjoy Hubschmidt. If anyone else wishes to address the board on any item not on the agenda, now's the time to do so. So, Ms. Taylor Silva?
Good afternoon, Chairman Young and fellow board members. I'm back from maternity leave. My name is Abby Taylor Silva with the Girl Shipper Association, so it's nice to see you all again. Last week, our members, and I'm going to speak to you in regard to the ag waiver. Our members turned in their annual compliance forms, a requirement for tier 2 and 3 growers. Many growers spent days and weeks, and some spent months, compiling all the information necessary to complete this 11-page, 160-question document for each of their farms. From your perspectives, the level of monitoring and reporting by farm documented in this form far outweighed any regulatory document they've had to complete in their lifetimes. Many felt they did not have the staff properly trained in their operations necessary to answer all of their questions, and were concerned about their inability, in some cases, to answer questions with complete assurance of the answer's accuracy. They were told by regional board staff to answer the questions as best they could, and while they appreciated the response was concerning, being that they were going to be held liable for any information that was inaccurate. A basic and necessary tenet, in my belief, of any regulation is that it be understood by the industry regulated and those enforcing the regulation. And time and again, unfortunately, we saw this wasn't necessarily the case. There continues to be a lack of trust of staff by many members in the industry, although there were some very helpful staff members giving guidance to those who called. That said, there was also a number of conflicting messages received. For example, one of my members left messages with two separate staff members in order to get an answer before the deadline. When the calls were returned, he was told by one staff person they didn't have to provide the nitrate concentration of their primary irrigation water source if they were in the cooperative monitoring program or had elected that on the NLI. Another staff member who returned this call the same day said that he did. Additionally, many growers felt that it was unfair that although the annual compliance form hadn't changed since September, they had to authorize that their NLI was current, which meant they had to log in to their NLI, at which point they were asked several questions about crop types, chlorpyrifos diazinon, fertigation, chemigation, wells, and sustainability. In some cases, they felt these questions were outside of the jurisdiction of the order, but were compelled to answer them in order to have their annual compliance form met by the deadline for fear of large fines. From the farmer perspective, the regional board is but one of many regulatory agencies that oversee production. There is Cal OSHA, DPR, FDA, EPA, CDFA, the Labor Commission, USDOL, APCD, Land Use and Zoning, USDA, PACA, you know all these. What farmers see is that the regional board has placed itself as the highest level of monitoring and reporting of any regulatory agency, state, federal, or local. And while they're trying to comply with regulations from all levels of government, the requirements of which in some circumstances contradict the regional board's order, and this is frustrating. I'm getting feedback that the regional board staff either don't understand or aren't concerned when these challenges are brought to their attention. There's also a feeling that certain questions on the form, for instance regarding permits for clearing land, were not consistent with the order and are outside the purview of the regional board and outside the scope of the MRP and order. Staff have dismissed those concerns, stating to us that the description in the MRP was not intended to be a verbatim description of the content of the annual compliance form, but the type of information to be included. This response didn't feel to some growers as though any type of question might be asked, as long as staff feels appropriate, irrespective of the order in the MRP. And we would appreciate more oversight by the board and stakeholders to determine what is appropriate and consistent with the order in this compliance form. We also received feedback that the Central Coast Water Board staff held a workshop with agricultural representatives, including the Grower Shipper Association and technical assistance providers, to review the content of the annual compliance form in an effort to show that outreach had been sufficient. A copy of the draft annual compliance form was provided only one day before the meeting, and from feedback that I received, as I was not available at the time, from the perspective of many growers, consultants, association representatives, and technical service providers, staff disregarded each substantive comment that was submitted. I received feedback that this type of outreach was not undertaken in good faith. This has been a key problem from the very beginning of this process, and true outreach and input would have developed an understanding and trust, and this underscores the basic problem of lack of trust between board staff and growers. As I mentioned before, we were told by some staff that growers were still required to provide nitrate concentration of their primary irrigation water source on the farm. And we had been under the impression that growers who selected this option wouldn't have to provide this data. Additionally, the maximum concentration which was asked for on this form may not be indicative of the averaged, blended, or typical nitrate concentrations in irrigation water actually used by a grower. This, not only do we feel that requesting this is inconsistent with the NRP, but it is an improper question that provides information out of context. And by requiring this data, there is now a major disincentive for growers to participate in such a program. Our partners are seeking development of a groundwater monitoring program that is spatially distributed, statistically defensible, and strategically planned. We believe this program will provide better, more accurate basin data to the benefit of growers, the public, and the regional board. We are now concerned that few growers will want to participate, making such a program financially infeasible to those who do. While we are very interested in continuing to meet with staff and the board to rebuild relationships and trust, the experiences many of our members had with the annual complaints form did still feel adversarial and uncompromising. We hope that you will consider these concerns and others we have and will continue to express in writing and update the annual complaints form accordingly.
So, Abby, you reviewed, right, the letter, the November 29th letter.
Yes.
Did that address any of the issues that you just raised? Because it sounded like I heard some of them
right. We
attempted to address with this letter.
I think that in regard to the letter, we did appreciate the quick turnaround on the letter. That was very much appreciated. Thank you. I think that the responses to the questions, yes, they were yes and no. So in regard to the maximum nitrate concentration, it didn't feel that there was really an understanding of the fact that what the question was being asked, which was what is the nitrate concentration in the water that's being used to irrigate, that is going to be blended water. And so the response said, you know, you can look back to the farm plan. Well, growers are still going to be then giving you information that they don't think is accurate in their annual compliance form. So while it did, and I understand it was a very quick response, and we went, you know, it's our fault that you didn't get the letter until 10 days before the annual compliance form was due. But we would like to keep on discussing these things because there are quite a few confusing items.
Well, we're going to be discussing these things continually.
Something specific. My understanding from Gail from Western Growers is there's going to be a supplemental letter,
I guess,
providing more detailed on what their concerns are, right down to describing paragraphs, lines, that kind of thing, so that we can look at the various issues. I've committed to Gail that I would meet with her in Sacramento at some point, and we would sit down and walk through those issues face to face, and then try to come to some resolution on those.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry. Additionally, I received an email just a couple hours ago from a grower outlining another concern. I know I don't have that much time. I don't know if it'd be appropriate to state it now or if you'd rather see that in written form.
Well, if you can do it real quickly,
okay. Because
we want to get out of here because we're going to a field trip.
Sure.
So,
okay. This morning I received a concern email from one of my members who's a small grower who farms fewer than 400 acres in total. He's concerned because his NOI updates changed his tier, so the updates he made last week, from a 1 to a 2, and these are his quotes. I discovered that water board labeling a range of land adjacent to a supposed impaired water body. He says they are trying to slip this in as Tula Creek by cleverly calling it the South Branch of the Salinas River. I don't understand how this can be done. This is a tributary that has never been known officially as South Branch of Tula Creek. It is probably just a field drain and has no name. This is very concerning, and if we start doing this, then the whole Salinas Valley farming system could be considered as adjacent to an impaired waterway because it can be proven that just about all the farming ground is a tributary to the Salinas River. And this would make drastic changes to growers who are trying to be in Tier 1, making them Tier 2, and unintentionally, according to what staff originally shared.
Well, it sounds like this should be added to the list of issues that we should be looking at.
Very good.
If you could incorporate that somehow into the responsive letter
Absolutely.
That you've got, and because that way when you address it to the board like you did, then it at least it involves my review of what staff is proposing, and I'm able to talk to Jessica and Ken about it and feel comfortable that, you know, we're kind of meeting the intent of answering the question.
Okay.
So, and if it doesn't work, we're going to just continue to go through this till we kind of distill this down to where it should be. Lisa, I think, wants to comment right about this, correct?
I just want to make it on the last comment from Ms. Mulgrew that I just reviewed. I wasn't able to get all the details, but I just wanted to make an alternative proposal on that one item.
Okay.
I have a tier review request, a request for review of Terry, and this is a common issue that arises, that if we are able to work directly with that grower, we can look at the information that was uploaded to the database, we might be able to resolve it directly, and I'd be happy to have staff do that soon rather than later and get the details, however, email or otherwise on that, instead of having to worry about waiting for a letter and a general response on some of the bigger issues.
Then do it that way, and I guess if the grower is not satisfied with that initial effort, then bring it back.
And we did give him that form yesterday, Lisa, thank you. It was, I had to go through past emails to find a link to it. It wasn't very easy to find, just from his review of your website, if it could be put up there. That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Steve Shemek.
Soon, 8 minutes, 35 seconds, I get a lot of time here, thank you. My name is Steve Schimmick with the Auto Project in Monterey, Coastkeeper. Oh gosh, it changed. So a couple things. First of all, on the comments that you just received, sometimes you are going to give answers that the people just don't want to hear. And that's just reality. What I'm here to mention today is a lawsuit that Monterey Coastkeeper and the Auto Project have against Monterey County Water Resources Agency. And the punchline will come at the end, so bear with me. But basically, we sued them 2 years ago claiming that they were a discharger, claiming that they had not updated their waste discharge reports, nuisance, and violation of public trust. The County of Monterey, embarrassingly, has spent $500,000, and that's by their requests, for this particular suit, $500,000 trying to beat back our lawsuit. And it was fully briefed, ready to go to summary judgment, and there was kind of a problem with that, but we ended up in the mandatory settlement conference before trial. And at that mandatory settlement conference, at the onset of it, Monterey County basically said, we're ready to go to trial. The judge asked to meet with them privately, and a few minutes later, the judge announced that Monterey County wanted to settle with us. You can lead into that whatever you'd like. So the judge ordered that there be a mediator and that there be a technical advisor, and that the process take a number of months, and that we try and come up with a solution for the water quality problems in the Lower Salinas Valley, specifically the Reclamation Ditch and Blanco Drain areas. Frankly, this is huge, and here's why it's huge. It's huge because, first of all, there's serious problems in that area, and I'm not talking about the whole Lower Salinas, but the Reclamation Ditch and the Blanco Drain, which is the area to the east of the Salinas River. And this is going to impact you because you also have nutrient TMDLs that are coming down right now in that area being proposed. There's also the ag waiver. It's going to impact NOAA fisheries because they're also leaning on Monterey County Water Resources Agency to improve conditions in the lower drainage. And so my point is that, and here's the challenge for me, I can stick to the notion of a settlement agreement that resolves the lawsuit between Monterey County Water Resources Agency and the Otter Project, Or I can kind of think bigger and think about the nutrient team deal. Think about NOAA fisheries. Think about Ag River. Think about ways that growers that participate in a big solution with Monterey County Water Resources Agency could get credit within the Ag River system as a project which is allowed in the order. There's lots of ways to think big. And I'm frankly challenged, not being a lawyer, of how you're going to, you know, think big in this arena when literally I'm going to be in a settlement agreement with an agency that's going to try and construe this very narrowly. So I just want to point out to you that we do have the potential for some big ideas here. And they could impact the agency because we literally sat in a meeting, I want to say 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago, on the nutrient team deal for the Lower Salinas. It was really recently. And this could help that. This could help that. Any questions? We anticipate the process is going to take 6 months.
Great. Thank you very much for your comments. Craig Stewart.
Good afternoon. I appreciate the time. My name is Craig Stewart. I'm a professional engineer for Pinfield and Smith Engineers. I deal with hydraulics, hydrology, stormwater quality, and I'm here to speak about the post-construction stormwater management requirements for development projects in the Central Coast area. I have some concerns. I understand that the Central Coast stormwater quality requirements have now been adopted into the Phase 2 NPDES municipal permit draft tentative order, which has had the effect of cutting off the petitions that had been filed previously by a number of municipalities and others, which has cut off the ability to fine-tune the requirements and appears to me to have been, we haven't been able to address some of the changes that would be necessary to make the permit work much more smoothly. There's a number of serious concerns that a number of people have brought up. I'm working with the City of Santa Maria. One of the ones that I'm concerned with and am aware of is that the volumes that are required for retention and treatment are multiplied by what I'd call a funny number, a factor of 1.963, almost 2. The reference that it applies to very clearly says that it's being applied inappropriately. And when you go back to the original text, it's very clear that it's being applied inappropriately, and not. And as I understand from information I've received this morning, the text that they've referred to is not even current. It seems to me that what would be fair would be to be able to one either allow the current requirements not to take effect immediately, so these things can be worked out, and perhaps at that time apply the current state regulations. Let Region 3 use those regulations that are applicable to the whole state. And otherwise, we're going to be getting into a situation where we'll be incurring unnecessary and expensive litigation for the state of California. We don't need that. I don't want to see that as a citizen of the state.
Okay, isn't this what we talked about earlier? Okay, so we do. Yeah, I know Joy from Santa Barbara County is going to probably mention the same thing. On this, we're aware of this, and maybe we'll hear from Joy, and then we'll give you the response of where we're at in terms of responding to this concern.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So just one point of clarification, the state permit has not been adopted yet.
Right.
So their petition has not been affected yet.
Right.
And so I just want to make that clear.
Right.
Yes.
We'll make everything clear after we hear from Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I'm Joy Huffschmidt, and I manage the San Gabriel County Clean Water Program, and I did want to address the post-construction requirements. As we get into the details of the regulations, we're finding that they are quite complex, and that our ability to accomplish them is becoming quite problematic. And this is especially the case with Attachment D mm-hmm. of the regulations. As you may recall, this was something that came out as part of the final draft order, and it was just before the adoption hearing, so there wasn't a lot of vetting of that attachment. And basically what Attachment D does is first of all, it requires the 95th percentile standard, which basically doubles the 85th percentile standard that's being used throughout other parts of the state and the country. And it also includes the 1.96 multiplier, which again doubles the infiltration volume. So what we're required to do on the Central Coast is to basically quadruple the infiltration volume that's required anywhere else throughout the state or the nation, as far as I'm aware. As you know, you directed your staff at the September hearing to work with the JURT and to try to work through the process to test the feasibility of it and possibly propose any necessary changes. And someone from Santa Barbara County is on the JURT, and they are working through that. And again, you heard from Mr. Moore this morning, and just brought up that the state is incorporating the Region 3 post-construction requirements into the new municipal general permit. They've got a workshop scheduled January 8th, and they're proposing to go to adoption here in February. And we in Santa Barbara County, and I think jurisdictions throughout the Central Coast, are pretty concerned about this, because what it does is it basically ties the Region 3 requirements to the state permit, so that if there are any revisions that need to happen, we need to do it twice. So we'd have to reopen the state permit in order to make those changes. So we would hope that they're not going to do that. And I recognize that you don't have the ability to influence that.
Well, we might.
You might. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we'll tell you what we're going to do.
All right.
As soon as you conclude.
Okay. Well, I just, we're in Santa Barbara, so we're going to take the opportunity
sure.
to get this on the radar screen to let you know that we do have some concerns. That we think that there are definitely details that may have been adopted, maybe prematurely, that need to be worked through. We're working through the JURT process, and we're hopeful that that's going to be fruitful. And hopefully this will be an item that will be before your board sooner rather than later. I would hope that you won't wait to hear an update just prior to the September adoption, September 2014, September 2013, when we actually have to get this up and running. So sooner rather than later. Thank you.
This was brought to our attention through Board Member Johnston, who had been contacted by somebody from the city of Lompoc.
No, Robert Kentley.
Robert Kentley from the city of Watsonville.
Watsonville. So, Mr. Harris, maybe do you want to articulate and describe for members of the public what is kind of our response to these concerns?
One moment.
Okay.
There a couple of things. One is, as the individual mentioned, there is a time window here during which we still can talk to the state board about any changes we propose. I think at this point, though, we need to work with staff and go back and look at the issue and see what it is and find out what exactly at the JURT they're actually involved with in terms of what has been proposed and what staff is working on. I think we want to be cautious about going back to the state board without good justification. So I think we need to move through this expeditiously but cautiously. And I don't know if Lisa wants to comment on the attachment D. As I had mentioned earlier, there is a process. My understanding is there's a process that the infiltration numbers are goals, not necessarily hard numbers, and that there is a process through which municipalities can work through, that it's recognized that not everybody is going to be able to reach those infiltration numbers, but we would like people to look at that, but that there are alternatives available to them. And that was my understanding.
Okay, well, I think maybe we should bring this back to at the January-February board meeting so we can have, you know, a better discussion. This will give staff a chance to look at these concerns that have been raised, and that we still have some time to send a letter to the state board if we're in agreement that something should be clarified or modified. What? Yeah, but the state board's not going to do...
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I was just asking Jessica if, after meeting with staff, for example, and if we make a determination there's a, I'm just, you know, there is an issue that needs to be changed, can we, can I, under my authority, request a change to this from the state board, or would it have to come back to this board? And she said, I have the authority, I could actually request the change be made. It would not have to come back to this board.
Okay. Mr. Johnston.
Yeah, my understanding from our state board liaison this morning is that the state plans at this point to hold a workshop in January on the phase two MS4 general permit, and to with a target of adopting in February of next year. So that is a very short timeline, and I understand that the JERC has already been convened by staff, has met once on this, and that the Appendix D, I think, was the first subject that came up. And so I'm, you know, if we can get some resolution out of that, and if we can, you know, out of the JERC and staff combination, that makes sense, and have that sent to the state board, that's great. What I think I'd like to request is, I note that our next meeting is the 31st of January, and I think we've agendized the 31st of January and the 1st of February. We may only do one of those days. I'd like to suggest that this be agendized back to us as a report and or potential action item at that point, so that we have our options open, and we can hear back from the JERC process and or what the executive officer has done under his authority.
We can certainly do that. My concern is if the state board does not make any changes and the regional board decides in January to make changes, those changes may not go into effect because the state board will be essentially superseding our requirements with theirs. And so agendizing it for the regional board's action, you could certainly do that, but it may not be effective.
I understand that, and I would assume that if the state board is in the process now of incorporating the elements of the resolution which we passed, and if we were to revise that before they, in February of next year, pass their own resolution, I would be absolutely certain that they would look at that and take that into account. As to whether they change what they did, that's really up to them. And that would be, if indeed we felt on hearing back from staff and from the JERC, whoever else wanted to comment, that we wanted to correct something in there, I think it would send a message to the state board, and how they respond to it is really up to them. I understand that we don't tell them what to do. But I do think it's worthwhile. I think we need to, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think we need to, if there's the potential to take action, we need to agendize it as an action item. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
OK. Okay, Dr. Hunter, and then staff.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, so just so that I'm following the line or the series of steps, if Mr. Harris has authority to make changes in the order, or to make changes in the criteria?
It wouldn't be that Mr. Harris would be making changes to the order. It was that if the regional board staff and the cities kind of came up with an alternative solution, they could write a comment letter to the state board recommending the state board make a change, but it wouldn't be at the regional board level.
I see.
He cannot alter the resolution itself. That would solely be for the regional board to do so.
Okay, so the authority that Mr. Harris has is to communicate, convey what staff and the juror group come to agreement on as a good alternative option.
Right.
And that fits within the order, as you just stated, that there are, that these are goals, that there's some flex in there, and that, you know, specifying how they can better achieve those goals would be a very good thing to do, and I think the sooner the better that occurs, so that state board can consider what we are learning from the municipalities.
I'm not saying there is a problem. I'm just saying that we need to look at what the issue is and figure out if some change needs to be made. I think we can do that relatively quickly next week. We can sit down with staff and talk about what the issue is and what is the path forward and come to a resolution and communicate that with the state board. The reason I'm cautious about going to the state board is this whole permit has been up and down and sideways, and it has not been an easy process for them to get to where they are for many reasons. Our language is part of that that whole mix, and I just want to be careful if we're going to ask for changes that they are correct and they are justified, and we can explain it to the state board. And if those are all true, I have no doubt that the state board would honor our wish and make the change.
Lisa?
All I want to do is clarify that comments to the state board are due on December 17th.
Okay.
And after the workshop, we don't know if additional open comments, people can go to the workshop to make their comments in addition to any written comments submitted on the 17th. So the urgency with which Ken is talking about to have some discussions next week is really on the limit, the opportunity to bring it back.
Okay, Mr. Johnston.
And I would say from where I sit, the idea would be to have some consensus come out of the JURT and staff meeting. May or may not happen. It's always a good goal, and sometimes it's more attainable than others. But if we do not have anything by December 17th, that is yet another reason to have it agendized as an action item for our end of January meeting, because even if comments are untimely at that point, I'm sure that a resolution of this board would be it would be another matter.
Are we okay with that? I support that, bringing it.
You can certainly do that.
Okay, so let's do that. And then Ken, let me let him know anyway when we speak weekly as to what staff has come up with in its analysis.
I should have something for you next week.
Good. Probably next Thursday.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Do we know when the JURT is meeting with the staff?
When is it meeting? Do I know?
Somewhere in here. I can't see what these on. I don't think there's a meeting scheduled next week, so we're just going to have to convene a way to talk to the key parties, and that's not a problem. So I can tell you when the next meeting if you're really interested, but I don't think that's that significant.
I'll make sure you're talking about that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Director from the Goleta West Sanitary District. I do not have a name.
Larry Meyer,
okay.
Sorry about that. I just will keep this very short, as I'm sure you want to get in this tour that you were talking about. He came up to say hello, and wish that you were down here a bit more often. I've been to a couple of your upstate meetings, and I'm aware of your problems with Salinas River and runoff up there. But we'd like to see you more often. And since the child keeper was talking about sanitary overflows, I would like to point out we haven't had any in this year or last year or however long back it was since the last one. However, I'll keep this short and cut off here.
Okay, thank you. You know, one thing about our meetings, before I got on the board, Mr. Meyer, there were no Santa Barbara meetings for many, many, many years. And it only happens because there's a Santa Barbara board member. Now there's two. Probably getting one meeting a year is about all that you're going to see, unfortunately. San Luis Obispo is closer than to some folks up in Salinas or Watsonville. So
the trip to Watsonville is a long trip.
It is.
I've went up for one of your hearings.
Yeah, it is. We got a long, narrow district, region. But we're coming back, I think, in March, right?
In March, we'll be here.
So we'll be here in March.
Well, thank
you. Okay, thank you.
Watsonville's known as the Santa Barbara of the North.
Yeah. Think that way. Okay, does any other member of the public wish to address the board at this time on any item not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none.
Do you want to do the executive office report?
Yes, right.
And then maybe talk about whether we should even do 13 or continue 13 to the next meeting.
Yeah. Well, we can briefly describe 13 okay. and what it is and set it up for this continued discussion.
So
15, item 15 is what we're on right now.
Just a couple of quick comments about the executive director's report. You'll see that there's the tables of the 401 certs in there. And so as part of the changing methods or procedures, you're going to see more of the routine items that the staff processes in the executive director's report. You won't see those coming before you unless there are unresolved comments, as I mentioned earlier. The other thing I wanted to bring up, and I'm going to ask Harvey to talk about it briefly, is because I know there's a fair amount of interest on it, was the updated standard provisions for MPDS permits.
Okay, so this came about as a result of primarily the spill at South Slo County Sanitary District. And even long before the enforcement action got here, we had some discussions in-house with staff, and we had some discussions with Jean-Pierre Wolf, not about the incident there, but about how we can get the word out to the dischargers about new standards for maintenance, electrical maintenance, mechanical maintenance, and things out there that it doesn't appear that a lot of our dischargers are up to date on. So you've got a copy in the EA report of the attachment, the standard provisions in underline and strikeout. If you look closely at the two MPDS permits that you approved today, that they're already in there, this exact version. So we've gone ahead and done that. We looked into the idea of issuing some kind of order that would automatically make these applicable to all MPDS permits. It doesn't look like we can do that. There are very few instances in which we can reopen an MPDS permit, and this doesn't apply. So what we're proposing to do is include these in any new MPDS permit that may come before the board. And by the end of 5 years, it'll cover everybody. I believe we can. We have a similar set of standard provisions for WDRs, non-MPDS WDRs. And I think we can issue an order that would apply to all of those. Do you think we could do that, Jessica? Have the board issue an order that says everybody's standards provisions are hereby modified.
I'd need to look into that. I don't know the answer off the top of my head.
We would send it out for public comment to all the people to whom it would apply first, obviously, and let them provide some comment, but that's something we could do. So that's it in a nutshell. The two major changes are on provisions B11 and B12, where it talks about electrical and mechanical national standards that discharges can look to provide some help with how they can do maintenance and upkeep of their systems.
So, Dr. Hunter, it's a small but a step towards some of the concerns and that you raised earlier about storm events and climate change and making sure the plants are more reliable and redundant.
I know I totally understand these kinds of infrastructure changes have to come about in the long term, but I think any way we can initiate those changes and begin to identify low-hanging fruit in terms of technology, but also recognizing that some of these systems are pretty old and are going to be looking at redesign or expansion. With population pressure, those are the opportunities where we need to be ready, is what I think I'm after, is just being ready to make it clear what types of changes we're looking for in terms of climate change and anticipating increased storm events.
And finally, the last thing I want to point out is under administrative reports, the presentation training and significant staff meetings, I think you'll see that your staff have been very, very busy on outreach type efforts. I won't go into all those, but I just want to compliment staff on, it does take a fair amount of time and effort on their part to go out and do these things, and I just want to say thank you to them and just to take note.
Mr. Harris, a question about the staff outreach when it involves like the ag order in the workshops or stakeholder meetings that staff is conducting. When the regulated community submits questions or has issues that they would like staff to address, is there any record of those that gets memorialized as something that can be kind of looked at by us?
I'd say sometimes. When someone submits questions to us in writing, in email, and we respond back in email, those are saved so that, you know, they go into the file. So there is a record of that. When we are at a workshop and responding to questions there, then I would say no. I don't think that there are minutes kept or a transcript or anything like that. Mm. So it depends on the form in which that discussion is occurring. Mm.
Okay. Dr. Wolf?
Yes, as a follow-up in regard to some of the proposed changes regarding electrical and mechanical standards, I took the opportunity while we had our meeting in Sacramento to talk to Tom Howard briefly about it, and he's very interested in incorporating some of this because obviously electrical and mechanical problems are not germane to the Central Coast only. So I have offered to help in providing, you know, the similar information presented to staff. And, you know, there's another little element in here which relates to cybersecurity. And that's also a very important element because today water treatment plants use extensively Wi-Fi systems, wireless systems for communication. There's been several instances of breach of security, and there was a proposed meeting in Lawrence Livermore Lab sponsored by Homeland Security, and water treatment facilities were included in facilities considered of national importance. And it came out that the vulnerability of some of the system was so significant that the meeting was canceled because of security concerns. Mm-hmm. So, I volunteer to assist a little bit in that area, and I will copy, you know, our office here on the correspondence that I will have.
Can I go back to your comment, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Your question. Listening to the comments today about how staff is interacting with the ag community, I was thinking it would be great if the board members could observe that themselves somehow, and I'm trying to think of how we can do that. But I would really like to think about that and pursue that, and let the board members know when we are having workshops so that you can attend, either announced or unannounced. You don't have to know you're going to be there. You can just show up.
That would be great.
And you can hide in the audience if you'd like.
I think it's
great for yourself.
To build on Michael's idea at the State Board, we just need to include a couple of sentences that say you may be present. There may be a quorum, but no action is going to be taken. If we put that in the announcements, we're good to go. That's all we need to do.
Why don't we do that?
Okay.
Any idea on the next?
I don't, but I'm going to check. I'm going to go back and we'll talk about that. And another thing.
Pajaro River on Monday, and next I was thinking of dropping in.
You shouldn't have told us. Yeah, I think that's great. And what you don't see is that we have farmers coming into our office almost every day, working with staff, sitting at computer terminals, and working through their the issues that they may have. And we're getting feedback from them that while they do not appreciate being regulated like everyone else, that they're really grateful for the help. And so you're not seeing that or hearing that, and I think it's unfortunate. And I wish there was a way for you to, you know, be aware of that as well. So, but I'm going to think about that and see how we can get more of that information to you.
Okay, thank
you. Can we just put cameras in all their office spaces? And have it live stream on the web, and we can just check in.
Well, I mean, I was actually thinking that maybe we should video these workshops that we have. We haven't done that before, but we should video them, and, you know, you could see it.
I don't know that that's necessary, you know. I'll just share with you that one of the concerns expressed to us is that, you know, there's workshops that take place and not all of their concerns get addressed in the way they would like. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's one side of the story. Mm-hmm. We don't know what the other side of the story is, but I just want to make sure that, you know, we kind of take a look at that somewhat, and maybe just having some of us go to some workshops would be helpful. Mm-hmm. If you have any other ideas, that would be okay. I know that we're going to kind of cull together what we think from our farm tours, some mm-hmm. common interests that stand out that we would like to get addressed, and we'll do it in a way that, you know, we can make sure that they're satisfied with the response, that it makes mm-hmm. sense mm-hmm. with whatever we come up with.
Mm-hmm. Chair, so,
yes.
My comment on the idea of videotaping meetings is that you would inhibit discussion. People have hesitation about being on that type of a
right.
documentation or it's a good thought.
That's a good point. And yeah. we've actually not done that in the past for exactly those reasons.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Quick comment. On
very quick.
I agree with Ken Harris talking about the number of workshops that staff make the time to give. And I think that there's usually a silent majority of people who attend these workshops that very much appreciate them. And even if we get some comments that their comments weren't addressed fully or their questions not answered, I will guess that it's usually the minority of participants, and that the majority of them come away from those workshops better informed than they were, and they probably appreciate those workshops more than they don't appreciate them. So thank you, staff, for having workshops. I think it's great.
Okay. All right,
that concludes the executive director's report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Harris. We have 4 minutes in which perhaps, Mr. Harris, you could simply introduce item 13 to us, staff can, and then to be continued with this item.
To be continued. Item 13, origin comes out of the Water Quality Coordinating Committee meetings that were held in Sacramento. For the audience who are not aware of those, that's where regional board members from all of the regions get together with state board members to discuss various issues. And integrated water resource management in its broadest sense was really the focus of the discussion at the last WQCC, including tours of the Delta and DWR facilities. I think across the board, all the regional boards thought it was one of the better WQCCs. And not just this board, others have expressed an interest in delving into what is going on in their region.
So out of that, we've put together item 13, which is a lot of information. It just really kind of scratches the surface, but it's really just meant to start the conversation with this board about all of the activities that go into sustaining our water resources, both in supply and quality. And what I'd like to do is continue it to the next meeting when we have 1 or 2 days. Staff are prepared to talk about individual items. And I think the goal at that point is to see after that discussion where the board would like to go next in terms of the topic, whether you want to have a special workshop at some point and invite dignitaries and officials from around the region to come in and talk about their projects, or other areas have higher level coordinating entities in some of the regions. This region does not do that. It does not have that. So, you know, maybe there is a need for that in some way. I don't know. But it's something to be talked about next week.
You know, perhaps I read through the staff report and something was missing from it that I'd like a little discussion on.
Okay.
And that is how the regional board could interface more with these IRWMs. Now, I know that they're set up to look at grants that get funded for projects. And I know that we're involved in our staff is involved in looking to make sure that our priorities that we've identified in our region are high up on those projects that we're going to go ahead and give our nod to. I'd like to know more about how these IRWMs kind of operate. Is it simply a meeting? I mean, is it simply a group that looks at grants, gets together to look at grants for a region, or is there more opportunity for us as the water board to kind of influence our own priorities and objectives as they relate to water supply in some way? So everything seems to be touched in here pretty nicely, but that component was something I was specifically looking for.
So maybe we can bring back a revised item.
Yeah, revised it on the back end of this.
We'll
maybe
do that.
You have the same question too? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if there's a there in terms of, if there's like a body or...
Is there a body, and how do we interact with the body?
The IRWMs are.
Exactly.
Okay, we'll do that.
Dr. Hunter?
Yes, I submitted a brief written comment that I would like to see the Los Osos Groundwater Basin added as an area of concern under the seawater intrusion discussion. And that would allow us to keep that discussion active and update the board on where we are with our interactions with the county. Thank you.
Okay, we'll add that.
Okay, great. All right, that brings to an end this meeting. It's 2:42, so we're done for today.
Jessica? The field trip is part of the board meeting,
so you're right.
We haven't adjourned yet.
So we're going on a field trip to the city's golf course.
We're beginning there, and then I believe we may
Posidas.
Go from there elsewhere.
From McKenzie Park. And then we'll terminate our meeting, close our meeting.
At the end, yes.
At the end, okay. We might as well, because, you know, it's in the direction that you guys would be heading up north. So, okay, thank you.